Blog Talk Radio.
Zero, longitude zero, planned by the Creator. Sesanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now we give you Africa, the center of the world. So vast, so great, the the color of life, universal harmony. The earth supports our conscious efforts for sustained humanity. Human beings, human love, on a spiritual tip. So vast, so great, the African embrace. Live beyond, love beyond your skin to where you belong.
Hip-hop that we don't stop. You see, it started a long time ago, and it wasn't a show. We gave birth to a style like a precocious child. feeling the passion for life, erasing away all the strife. Telling our tales with verbal mail, putting honey on the blade, creating language to persuade. Share who we've always been. Always a blessing, never a sin. We are doo-wop and bebop and hip-hop and we don't stop. Since our mother gave birth to everyone on earth, should we echo her call? And always walk tall, cause we're hip to the world, so we create black pearls that everyone can wear, that everyone can share. We can't live in despair, so we shine everywhere. On and on. On and on. On and on.
We welcome you to Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother Africa, it's always a privilege and an honor to come to your homes this evening, where we can speak truth to the powerless and the powerful. This is the 22nd day of May, 2022, and we will feature today the theme, part two, Disinformation and Lies. That's right, part two, Information and Lies. You're welcome to come and join us by dialing 323-679-0841. But like always, we'll get started with our party by introducing you to our political panelists and analysts for today's program, followed by what's going on in your world and the community, and then we discuss today's theme. Brother Africa and my panelists, they all are in the seat, and they're going to take the heat, because as you define it, they're going to stand behind it. So let's get started with our party. We'll bring in right now Brother Haki, and we'd like to welcome him to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Brother Haki.
Brother Africa, thanks for having me. My name is Haki Kamathi Mashoki, currently with African Awareness, and of course, you know, my name is Institution Building. But I think one thing that's important, Brother Africa, when we talk about institution building, is this whole question around strategy being employed by those in positions of power to maintain dominance. And, of course, maintaining their dominance has very negative impact on, society, generally speaking. And so one of the things, when we talk about these negative aspects in terms of strategizing politically, this whole question around the Great Reset. Now, I want to briefly talk a little bit about the Great Reset, but before I do that, there's some kind of some information I have to convey prior to the actual statement itself. But in any event, Brother Africa, I want you to listen, check this out. Now, the discontent with the U.S. inability to maintain a rule-based order or the perpetuation of Western imperialism has angered some Western Western leaders like Francis Macron and Germany's Merkel to advocate a different path from the U.S. Preferential policies like purchase of dollars along with petrodollars has afforded the U.S. the ability to benefit economically even when economic policies embraced by the U.S. are counterproductive. Contractual relationships between the U.S. and the Western world calls for the U.S. to maintain hegemony over economic affairs globally. With the emergence of China, Russia, Cuba, and Venezuela, the ability of the U.S. to maintain its contractual agreement has faltered. The Great Reset, under the auspices of the World Economic Forum, provides an opportunity to take the lead in strategizing the future of the global economy as a last-ditch effort to maintain Western imperialism, unencumbered by U.S. policies that have soured cooperation among the global South. Now, I think that's important that people understand that little bit of pretext, because it's important in terms of when we understand this the Great Reset, that we understand implicit in the Great Reset this whole question in terms of totalitarianism. And having said that, Brother Africa, check this out. Now, in the seeds of totalitarianism, key to understanding the Great Reset has been firmly entrenched in U.S. institutions at its inception. In 1622, the Virginia Council of State was established to regulate indentured servants, for poor whites and newly introduced African populations. This was established to delineate the wealthy from all others. This stratification was indicative of a burning desire among wealthy to consolidate their control and solidify institutions that would reinforce and confirm control by a minority of the people, namely the wealthy. Some historians trace the roots of totalitarianism to 1914 or World War I, when the economic benefits of weapon production and sales of weapons to Europe elevated the U.S. economy by providing revenues, thus spurring investments. Riding the tide of immense profits, threats to the profits occupied the minds of U.S. elites, who envisioned a world without Russia, eliminating the possibility of workers rising up and claiming their share of the profits. It is firmly believed by wealthy elites, profits must be maximized, but maximization of profits could only be achieved by global financial institutions working in sync to defeat unions, mass demonstrations, and poverty, and revolutions around inequality. This is the name of the Great Reset. The concept of the Great Reset was established by the World Economic Forum. The WEF was established in 1971 by Klaus Schwab. Schwab, an engineer by training, is a big admirer of U.S. corporate exploitation of its citizens and has dedicated his life's mission to bring into existence a global economic system structurally and philosophically in tune with the U.S. corporate state and its ability to stifle dissent. Now, achievement of the WEF's mandate is an expensive endeavor. Funded by billionaires throughout the world and government institutions throughout the world, the $460 million yearly budget is insufficient. In addition, WEF charges attendees for events $29,000. And membership is reserved for 1,000 of the largest corporations in the world who pay between $62,000 and $620,000 per year. Strategic members pay even more, but with the higher price tag, strategic members have access to information not shared with other members. While creating the perception that WEF is transparent, it reveals itself to be a tight-knit structure with questionable objectives. For example, WEF's preamble states, quote, "The agenda is a plan of action for people, planet, and prosperity. It also seeks to strengthen universal peace and larger freedoms," end quote. And deconstructing this double talk, much can be ascertained about WEF's motives. 2 points. First, prosperity implies unlimited economic growth, which is why humanity is on the precipice of self-destruction and a planet that's becoming uninhabitable. Because endless economic growth theoretically can't be achieved without corresponding levels of poverty, it is not prosperity for humanity that's being sought, but prosperity for the economic elites. Secondly, the larger freedoms refers to economic markets or the ability to make large profits. Large profits or excessive profits can only be realized in a climate of economic decline by elevating the level of oppression and annual exploitation to achieve excessive profits. So I ask, whose interest is being served by the WEF? Now, the necessity of the WEF to global elites are vital for a myriad of reasons, but a couple of reasons dominate. First, the decline of capitalism is palpable. Rising inflation, mass unemployment, and declining wages have greatly facilitated anger among the masses. Cultural wars, i.e. critical race theory, replacement theory, have resonated with large numbers, but such draconian attempts to manipulate the multitudes has floundered. Greater oppression is desired by economic and political elites, but oppressive tactics utilized too soon in great preponderance could backfire. Process is required to best facilitate mass oppression, and the WEF provides the process by which feigning concern about the state of the world while covertly working behind the scenes to leverage the $100 trillion of its members to buy up assets of developing countries while bribing appropriate authorities. Secondly, WEF access to government officials and economic elites ensures communications from interested parties is consistent. Consistency of message is key to winning over political leaders who rely on messaging for authorities to sell the idea that capitalism is responsive to the needs of humanity. The more a politician uses messaging originating from the WEF, the more legitimacy their statements convey. Legitimacy is an important aspect because with legitimacy comes the power to discern who qualifies as a good citizen and who qualifies as disruptive. In relative short order, an entire community, ethnic group, or linguistic group could be characterized as disruptive, justifying denial of their human rights. Think about the incident in Buffalo a week and a half ago, or the massacre in New Zealand. Now, the power to persuade is powerful, and WEF is very, very powerful. Now, the deception employed by the WEF is only as effective as institutions that embrace WEF objectives. Without support from the UN, World Health Organization, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, European Central Banks, the Great Reset would not be viable. Collectively, these institutions control between $20 to $25 trillion in assets, which creates a lot of influence. However, there are more tangible reasons for Western elites to support the Great Reset. Strategies employed by Western intelligence agencies to pacify the populations have had limited success. In the case of COVID-19, numerous physicians have revealed studies of SARS-CoV-2. For those who don't know, SARS-CoV-2 is essentially COVID-19. These studies revealed failed to make the case that COVID-19 actually exists. Now, according to Peter Conan, 193 UN countries went on COVID lockdown at the same time in March 2020, even though allegedly there were only 4,700 alleged cases worldwide. Viruses take time to spread, not manifest over the globe as though they originated everywhere at the same time. Equally confounding is the finding of a Spanish research team which found vaccines contain graphite oxide, which is used for electrical and thermal conductance, which is capable of creating magnetic fields in the human body. It goes on to say, the study that is, that magnetic field created is accessible by 5G microwaves. It appears claims of being magnetized are true. Brother Africa once talked about the airport security screening him, and security warned would beep when directed at his upper chest. Stories like this abound, and as a consequence, COVID-19 was viewed suspiciously, and the subservience of the population anticipated by at least failed to materialize for the most part. In the case of the proxy war using Ukrainians as cannon fodder, most people in the U.S. have not been distracted by the talk of the Russian bear. Obedience of the population has not crystallized, and like COVID-19, the subservience of the population sought by political elites never materialized. Most people contend Russia's right to defend itself against threats in lieu of immense protocols spelling out NATO would not expand to Russia's border. Clearly, the aim of the war strategy was to distract the population in the U.S. from the economic malaise that's sweeping the country. Instead, this strategy did not simply underscore the instability of the economic system, but exacerbated an already declining economic system that elevated inflation to a 40-year high and in the declining economy. Juxtaposing rising unemployment, homelessness, and declining wages, the level of hostility among the masses is rising. Without doubt, the WEF offers Western elites the best chance of prolonging a dying capitalism, but even those odds are questionable given the emergence of states challenging U.S. hegemony. And I close with that, Brother Africa.
Thank you, Brother Akeem. Brother Anthony, welcome to Africa on the Move.
Thanks for having me, Brother Africa. Revolutionary greetings to you, the fellow panelists, and the listening audience. My name is Anthony Williams. I'm an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. Objective is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Going from Brother Anthony, we will bring in Brother Moses. Brother Moses, welcome to Africa on the Move.
Thank you, Brother Africa, and greetings to everyone within the sound of my voice, especially the illustrious panelists. My name is Robert Andrew Moses. I've been in the struggle for scientific socialism from the moment I was introduced to Marxism during the government class back in my high school years, 1968. I call Marxism the race to cure racism. I bear witness that there is one God, Jesus, who is the author and finisher of my faith, and that Mao Zedong is his messenger for government. Fathers, help your children. And we don't reverse correct verdicts. I'm pro-choice, and I vote. Women hold up half the sky. That's why I support the Equal Rights Amendment, ERA, yes. And the situation is, God is not the author of confusion. And we have to be vigilant and correct our mistakes when we are told about them. And the struggle is to define, stand behind the correct political position. The correctness or incorrectness of the ideological and political line will be decisive. And so I thank you once again, Brother Africa, for allowing me to be on the show.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Eleanor, talk to me.
Good evening, Brother Africa, fellow panelists, and our listening audience. My name is Eleanor Johnson. Thank you so much for inviting me to participate in this evening's forum. It's been a harrowing week. It was great to see the demonstration from Buffalo come down to Black Lives Plaza and let their voices be heard. It's been an eventful week. Thank you so much for having me this evening.
Thank you for being, Sister Eleanor. Right now, we're going to pause for the calls. When we come back, we're going to open up with what's going on in your world and the community. So don't you go nowhere. This is Africa on the Move.
Kill a man, why? architectural achievement which still baffles modern science.
The 225th emperor, direct descent from Solomon and the Queen of Sheba, He is the King of Kings, the Lion of Judah. The name Haile Selassie means power of the Trinity.
Educate yourself of Africa. Liberate yourself, Africa. Keep your head up high. No more will we cry. Hey, our history that they stole, Africa, is written in our souls, Africa. Oldest nation on this earth, know just what you were. Well, ships that sail to distant places robbed us of our rights and worth. History says that you've betrayed us, talking of the God you serve. Hear the rumbling in the sky, hear that our forefathers cry. And today we're still in chains, there's a shackle from our minds. You're the cornerstone, the king upon the throne.
Motherland representer, I'm on trial with the man, she my co-defendant, and I demand her attention, can you focus, woman? I'm getting closer to the sky every time I hit it. Haile Selassie, power of the Trinity, soul made in Niger, my vice made in Italy, white man's world that I'm living in, some say, but it was Africa, the continent we all came from, can't nothing come between me and you, so before I have seeds, gotta understand my roots, gotta understand the truth, we is all kings round here, life's not all fair, work till we fall dead, all going hard till I earn like a poor girl, although my body's in the U.S., my heart's there, I can never be ashamed of her, I got my features and my name from her, Mama Africa.
The richest place on earth, know just what you're worth.
Thank you.
Made in Africa by Stephen Marley. Welcome back to Missing Pages of History. We will make our transition right now to what's going on in your world and the community. You can call and share with us what's going on in your world and the community by dialing 323-679-0841. This is Africa on the Move. Starting off with Brother Haki, what's going on in your world and the community, Brother Haki?
Well, Brother Africa, a state senator out of Oklahoma, a Rob Standridge, came up with an interesting bill, and it's called the Student Religious Belief Protection Act, and it's very interesting for three particular reasons. First, it states teachers could be sued if they present an imposing view from the student religious beliefs. Secondly, it says parents can demand any book deemed anti-religious be removed from school libraries. And thirdly, subjects like LGBT, evolution or the Big Bang Theory, birth control, and presumably racism should not be discussed in schools. And the bills go on to say that in any event that the teachers prevent any type of infraction, they could be sued a minimum of $10,000. Now, here's the catch. The payment of $10,000 cannot come from the school system. It must come from the teachers themselves. If the teachers don't have the finances, then they are automatically fired from their employment. Now, this is very interesting. Now, my concern is this, Brother Africa. You know, one of the things is that, you know, a lot of these perceptions that these evangelicals have is not based upon logic or science. It's based upon, some internalization of some idea that has own legitimacy resides inside their own heads. But nonetheless, they believe it to be true. For instance, so how do you explain to evangelicals the universe is older than 2,000 years old, given the fact that you got trees that are older than 2,000 years old? Conveying that to someone who's an evangelical is a very difficult thing to do. Or how do you explain to evangelicals creation of human beings were not achieved three different times? In other words, how do you explain race as a social political construct that seeks to divide people in defiance of religious scripture? There are many evangelicals who take a position that, in fact, that any type of hardship that visit upon people of color has everything to do with their standing with the Creator. In other words, the reason why they are oppressed or they suffer is because their existence is at odds with creation. That's very, very ironic, particularly when you start talking about scripture, which talks about the love of all things, and then for someone to create this dichotomy in terms of, the Creator's love based upon skin color is sort of ridiculous. It's crazy. But equally problematic, Brother Africa, is the fact that when this bill talks about, it creates a problem in terms of separation of church and state. So essentially, by the teachers not being able to impart information or knowledge, it means that the power in terms of providing instruction or information or knowledge per se is actually in the hands of students and not in the hands of the educators. And I think that's very, very problematic, because one of the things, if you have a student who's going to articulate something that's maybe a bit out of this world, something that is not grounded in reality, the educational process has a vested interest in terms of providing some clarity for that young man or that young woman in terms of why their thinking might be somehow outside of the mainstream or maybe somehow irrational. But this bill provides that kind of clarification, which means that you're giving all the power to the children at the expense of the educational process. And for that, I find it really problematic. So the question of separation of church and state, for me, becomes problematic. And so if this bill passes, it's going to be very, very interesting in terms of the state of Oklahoma. But ultimately, if it does pass, you can envision that this thing's going to sweep much of the nation, particularly southern states, who are more inclined to agree with this line of thinking. And I close with that, Brother Africa.
Thank you, Brother Haki. And Brother Anthony, come and talk to us. What's going on in your world and the community?
Hey, a few things. One, the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, and its women's wing, the All African Women's Revolutionary Union, had a very nice webinar today on the role of women in our revolutionary struggle. It was very informative. And one of the things that struck me was how, women from different parts of the world and different levels of experience, there was a certain commonality. And that is that the solution to women's oppression is scientific socialism. And there seemed to be a general realization that capitalism is a major part of women's oppression. Also, let's see, it seems like this Summit of the Americas that's scheduled to take place in Los Angeles, California, in a couple of weeks, seems to be falling apart because of the United States' decision to exclude Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela from participation in this summit. And several countries have elected to boycott it because of that, decision by the United States. So that's an interesting, development. And also, let's see, around Napa, let's see, the Palestinians are catching hell from the Zionist forces. There are various attacks taking place all over Palestine against Palestinians and their struggle for control of their homeland.
Thank you, Brother Anthony, for your information on what's going on in your world and community. We now go to Brother Moses. Brother Moses, what's going on in your world in the community?
Well, I've been thinking about this for the last 2 weeks. I've been trying to get this information across, and so tonight, the God question, essentially Christianity versus Trotskyism. After much consideration, I have decided to criticize a trend within the working class movement for justice and peace. The Zionists deny the truth of Jesus' teachings on internationalism and against the restoration of Israel as advocated by the Zionists of his day. True, many Trotskyites are anti-Zionists in the political struggle, yet ideologically, they have not thoroughly broken with the Jewish traditions. This is manifested in the anarchy of production of childbirth. The most important decision morally one makes is when and under what conditions one should father or mother another human being. Christianity is about defense of the fatherland, i.e. the mother consciously declares who is the father of her child. Like Karl Marx and so many others, the children are labeled with the name of their father. This may seem like a small matter, but communism is a godless ideology and has no morality, only ethics. Professional revolutionaries are concerned with getting a job done, and this is accomplished by which behavior is judged. V.I. Lenin pointed out that morality belongs to the era of religion. Marx proclaimed religion to be the opiate of the masses. The materialist knows only human behavior, and there is no God. Jesus lived at a time when answering the God question was vital to human progress. Without a vision, the people perish. Without revolutionary theory, there can be no revolutionary movement. Jesus tackled the issues and reconciled humans and God. Quote, I am the way, the truth, and the light, unquote. Wise people recognize the correctness of his position, for it has meaning, especially for the Palestinian people. As Chairman Mao pointed out, The critical contradiction for the international movement of the working class is the national liberation struggle versus the imperialism, and not the imperialism versus the socialist camp. History has proven the correctness of this view. Trotskyism is the ideology threatening the advancement of the communist movement. Interestingly, the greatest defenders of socialism, everywhere except where it exists, have now generally accepted the existence of socialism, and there is less talk of, quote, socialism can't exist in one country, there's deformed workers' states, etc., unquote. The attack on J.B. Stalin and Mao Zedong are the direct result of Trotskyism and played a critical role in the collapse of the Soviet Union. I maintain there is one God, Jesus, and that Mao is his messenger for government. The Trotskyism is essentially petty bourgeoisie revolutionism, and I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Brother Hockey, what's going on your world community? You talk about this possibility of new legislation where teachers will be threatened to challenge any idea the students may have. And you're talking about the removal process where books can be easily removed based on some individual people's preference. It has a little haunting on this whole question of how we're going to arrive at the truth. And rewriting and revisiting history for the past to the present. Your response? Can you hear me, Brother Hockey? Okay, what we're going to do right now to our listening audience, from time to time, we have problems with our board. This is one of these cases. We can see if we can ride it out. You know, Malcolm was clear. When you're not doing anything, the enemy ain't doing that to you, then you must not be doing anything worthwhile. But it's unfortunate when we talk about this whole concept of freedom of speech. And just to talk about giving people information so they make choices. The best choices, correct choices, you run against these kind of tactics. So right now, my board is sort of dysfunctioning. What we're going to do, like I said, once they put, we're going to play a little music, and we're going to see if we can ride this thing out. So this is Africa on the Move. We're not going nowhere. We're going to be here. We'll be right back. Let's enjoy some musical inspiration. They're messing with our boards everywhere. They are messing with our boards. Okay, let's just see if we can just continue to talk. This is board that's going haywire. And this comes with the territory. Can you hear me talking, Brother Hockey? Brother Moses, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. I hear everything that's going on, yeah.
Yeah, they mess with this board. This board is going out of control. Let's see if we can ride this thing out. You're the only one that right now can, whose line is operating properly. What can we say? You have all kind of days and you have these kind of obstacles and you just can't run for you try to confront it. So let's see if we can battle this out for a while. Don't listen to me on Africa on the Move. This is why it's important we ask you the last couple of weeks. If you can email us, let us know that you listen to this program, that you appreciate this program. Just email us because there are lots of information that we'd like to share with you and give to you, but we have no way of communicating with you. We know you're listening to the show, but we don't know exactly who. So email us at AfricaOnTheMoon2@gmail.com. AfricaOnTheMoon2@gmail.com. So we can have a direct link to communicate with each other. Now, you know, what we're doing today through this platform is a platform we don't control. It's being controlled by the enemy, and they can do all kind of technological things to this form of communication to keep us from communicating. But this is why we need to establish a direct link where we know who our audience is and email us. Just say, I listen to Africa on the Moon, or I support Africa on the Moon. And email it to AfricaOnTheMoon2@gmail.com together. So we still wait and see if we can get our boy back. Brother Moses.
Yeah.
Are there any things you'd like to talk about a little bit about what took place this week that was sort of interest to you?
Well, there was a demonstration for Julian Assange this week, Tuesday, at 1 p.m. at the Department of Justice, Free Julian Assange. I think it was mainly Code Pink and some other groups. Julian Assange is, you know, a WikiLeaks publisher, and he's definitely he's a political prisoner, and we need to be doing all we can to see that he is released.
Yeah, I think taking Moses' voice out as well. So we're going to stay put, see if we can just ride this out. While we ride this out, I encourage everyone to pick up a book or something, read for a few minutes, and see if we can get this thing back in order. What can you say? What can you say?
Is Eleanor on the line?
No, all of their lines are out of whack for right now. Yours is the only one for right now. Let's see if we can wait a few minutes when we can ride this thing out. I just want to do the right thing, that's all. Is that actually so much, Brother Moses, just telling people to do the right thing?
Yeah,
just going to do the right thing, get the right information. That's all.
Yeah, in the end, truth will prevail. That's our faith, is that truth will prevail.
We totally lost control of our boy, the listening audience. So we're just waiting to see if we can ride this thing out for a little bit. So once told me if you want to freedom of press, you better own one. That makes a lot of sense. If you want a freedom of press, you better own one. If you don't own one, then you will never have it. Well, it's calming down a little bit. Let's see. I just wait a few more minutes. Let me go back to my lines. It's working. You still hanging in there with me, Brother Moses?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Let's see what's happening. Yes, I can. Let me go to Sister Eleanor. Can you hear me, Sister Eleanor?
Yes, Brother Africa. I'm here. Thank you.
Okay, we got your line back. Let's see if we got Brother Haki line back. Brother Haki, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we got your line back. Let's see who else on here. Brother Anthony, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
This board is going crazy. This board is going crazy, y'all. We got to organize like never before. So let's see if we can continue the show, but we're going to be interrupted for time to time, and my music board is completely gone. So that's all right. Let's kick the people some ballistics. What were we saying? We were talking about what's going on in the world community. Exactly, Brother Haki. There's this new law, this rule that's about suing the teachers, even if they question or challenge a student thought. I mean, the sole question of being able to be educated, the sole question of looking at history as being something objective, seeing like all this stuff is going out the book. They can write only what they want you to know. Your response, Brother Haki. That's the fact, that's the road we're going now. The road that they're going now.
Yeah. You know, you earlier you asked about the long term implications. My position in
that's
addition
right.
to long term implications. Hello? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead, brother. We can hear you.
Yeah, somebody got to mute their mic. They're coming through. All right. And in addition to the long-term implications, you know, of this particular bill, there's also short-term implications. One of the things is when we talk about.
Go ahead. Cut you off completely on this end. We can't hear you at all, Brother Haki. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Brother Haki, now? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right, go ahead now. They mess with the board, so we just gonna have to just deal with it. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems.
The implication.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems in terms of society, specifically when you say it's a democratic society, what is very important is access to information. But what's been happening over the last 5 to 7 years, it's been an intense attempt at actually circumventing, you know, access to information. And one of the things, one of the reasons why there's been a tremendous rush in terms of preventing the sensation of information has a lot to do with the fact that people, positions of power, recognize the precarious nature of the capitalist system. Capitalism is in great decline. Recently, I read a report talked about in terms of the stock valuations. We talk about the fact that in order to make money, you know, those organizations which sell stocks overvalue those stocks, and as a consequence, it has had a negative impact on the overall function of the overall economy. And as such, the people who do have access to all the assets, their motivation is simply to profit at any expense. And as a consequence, so when you talk about things like housing, you talk about things like even buying cars, the prices, or even food, the prices of these things have increased exponentially. So there's been a concerted effort in terms of making sure people don't make the connection between how precarious the society is and their own pain that they're currently feeling. So denying people information is very, very important to people in positions of power, because that way, if people are not cognizant of what's actually going on in society, then they're tend to be much more complicit in terms of participating on oppression, simply because they don't understand what's really going on. And so this bill is just sort of symptomatic of this kind of rush to deny people access to information. One of the things, you know, when we talk about, you know, religion, we got to be very, very clear. In the context of America, when they talk about, you know, protecting, you know, the sanctity of religion, they're talking about Christianity. They're not talking about other religions. You can criticize other religions, that's fine. But what you should not criticize is Christianity, and that is the issue, that is the thing. And so it's ironic that when you talk about Christianity, you talk about the origin of Christianity, most people who are Christians don't know about the origin of Christianity. They don't know anything about that. They don't know the origin of Christianity goes back to Ethiopia. They don't know that. They don't know that, in fact, that a lot of the Christian scriptures that they have embraced have actually been changed, not only historically, but also in the context of modern colonial America, in which in order to make people subservient to the state, a lot of those scriptures were changed to accommodate that end. So clearly, Brother Africa, this is just part of a long trend in terms of denying people access to information. And one of the things we've got to be very, very clear on, and denying people access to information, then you ensure people make the wrong decision. So as a consequence, you have a situation in Buffalo where a young man killed all these people under the mistaken belief that, in fact, that in doing so, he can avert, you know, the great replacement, you know, of white people in American society. Obviously, he didn't understand the economic reality, nor did he understand the political reality in terms of how capitalism functions. If he had understood that, he understand these very things that he perceived as a threat, are not a threat at all. They're only a threat in his mind because they have legitimacy, because he haven't had access to other kind of information. So the information that he actually had access to kept reiterating the same thing over and over and over again. So it has legitimacy in his mind. But in reality, when you talk about in terms of threats, in terms of, you know, as it relates to population, that whites really don't have any fear in terms of ever becoming a minority in America. And that's because of immigration policy as well as social economic issues in terms of the longevity as related to life for people of color. So this threat, the alleged threat in terms of white numbers, is just something that they, continually push, because it's going to it's going to invoke a kind of emotional response when people don't necessarily think. So we need information. We need alternative ideas in terms of you know how things operate in society. Without those alternatives, then clearly people are vulnerable to all kind of manipulation. But that's precisely what people in positions of power want. They want to make sure that people don't have access to information, increase their vulnerability, make them more susceptible to propaganda. And so we got to be very clear. You know, this is, this bill is simply a continuation of that mindset.
Okay, let's see if we can bring Sister Eleanor in here. Sister Eleanor, let me see if your line is back working again. I'm going to click on to you, and if you can hear me, say, yes, I can. Can you hear me, Sister Eleanor?
Can.
Beautiful,
yes,
beautiful. Yes, keep moving forward, Sister Eleanor. Sister Eleanor, talk to me. What's on your mind right now as we begin to figure out how to conduct the remainder of this program? What's going on?
I was listening to Brother Haki, and he's so right about right now inflation. You know, it's something that unemployment, being unemployed, is a very personal experience, but inflation is something we all witness every day when we go to the grocer, to the gas station, when we do whatever it is we do, and it really is a hardship. So it forces people to restrict, some people to restrict their purchasing, and that's the only control they have over combating inflation in their life. It reduces some luxury buying, and it's really bad right now. It almost feels like 2008 to me. We've survived the pandemic, 2 years of the pandemic, and here we are facing this outrageous inflation. And we're also distracted by the Russian-Ukraine conflict and investing so much in the Ukraine the fact that two neutral nations, rather than continuing to be neutral, would decide to join NATO at this time shows how much disinformation and panic there is in the world, in the EU, as well as the United States and other countries. We ignore the reality right now of the Palestinian people and this serious anniversary and important issues such as African Liberation Month and the importance of recognizing our allies and friends such as the Palestinian people, the Irish, looking at what's happening in Yemen with this Saudi attack on the people of Yemen, the suffering in Somalia, what's happening in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, what's going on so much in the world, and the lack of accessibility to the press, just what's happening and has happened in Mexico since last September, with so many journalists being murdered. So the question is, more than ever, we should learn from what happened with the election of a fascist like Donald Trump. We should realize that through organization, through organizing, we have the potential of organizing millions of people to bring about solid social change. And we should stand firmly with the workers at Starbucks and with Amazon. I may be boycotting Amazon, boycotting Starbucks. Why? Well, you know, think about it before you have that next soy latte. And these are considerations that working people, the middle class, need to take into consideration. And we need to align ourselves as workers together. And I think it can be done. We saw what Trump was able to do with lies. He still has thousands of people at rallies talking about a stolen election. Well, that didn't happen. And we get no reporting on the 39 states that passed voter suppression laws. And we saw that the governor of Arizona has joined Governor Abbott of Texas and wants to send migrant workers to the District of Columbia. Well, we're not xenophobic here, so send them. But the reality is, we need to take a look at what's happening domestically and try to unite all people. We cannot allow ourselves at this time to be divided by language or race. And in terms of this replacement theory, one thing Brother Aki has said previously, that's in a way really laughable, because there's so many people that are non-white in this country who are now calling themselves white. So it's a strange time in American culture and history, and it is an opportunity for us to be organized. It's an opportunity right now, I think, also for the brothers and sisters on the continent to unite around this energy crisis in fostering the development of reusable energy while utilizing the pipeline between Algeria and Spain. And also, it's an opportunity for us to encourage Pfizer and Moderna to allow the eight countries that are prepared to produce the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines in their countries, in South Africa, in Egypt, in Kenya, in Senegal, in Ghana, in Nigeria, in Morocco, to let that be done. Why should we allow the pharmaceuticals to have just such greed that they rather let people lose their lives rather than have these nations of the world produce the vaccine? They're asking Moderna and Pfizer to simply allow the proprietary information to be used, and that they will address the issue of distribution of the vaccine that is produced in their countries and on vaccine hesitancy. We also realize, Brother Africa, that the U.S. is about to hit a milestone, 1 million people dead. Did we lose that many people in the last two wars? Have we lost that many people in the last 50 years in car crashes? I don't know. as a matter of fact, but I would tend to doubt that that has happened. And there are many things to look at, and we need to stand in solidarity. Also with the Afghan people, there's no reason for the people of Afghanistan to starve and suffer as they are because of our disagreements with the Taliban. There's no reason for more than 500,000 people to have died in Yemen because the U.S. continues to sell the Saudis weapons. It's no reason that I know of that we should have drone strikes in Somalia, or why we do not allow the Palestinian issue of dealing with Israeli apartheid to be known, why the world is standing by while settlers are occupying Palestinian territory, Palestinian land. And we, as was mentioned last week, it could have been one of any other nations, as Brother Anthony said, Tanzania or South Africa, as some people call it, or Uganda or Kuwait. There was other countries offered. So it's not like there's any historical connection to the development of Israel as a military settler state. It was simply a matter of Great Britain and the Zionists deciding what would be the most reasonable location in terms of economic development and access to the EU and the Western world.
All right. Thank you, Sister Eleanor. And let's see if we can bring in Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, if you can hear my voice, say Africa on the move.
Yes, I can, Brother Africa.
Brother Anthony, let's talk a little bit about the APRPGC and the African Liberation Front. So far, the various activities that have taken place. Give me your synopsis of some of the things that have taken place and some of the things that you have learned from it.
Sure. Let's see. We've throughout the month, we have the same overall theme, and that is that we're taking a stand against imperialism, capitalism, Zionism, and neocolonialism, and for Pan-Africanism, one unified socialist Africa, which is the ultimate solution to the problems that Africans throughout the world face. And let's see, one of the things that struck me at the program on the role of women in today's revolutionary struggle that was presented by the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, is how similar the views of the various women organizations were. Even though they're organized in different parts of the world, they face different conditions and have different experiences. One of the things that struck me was how they realized that the liberation of women is bound up with the defeat of capitalism in all of its manifestations. In other words, for their people to be liberated, it has to be under a scientific socialist government. And that's something that struck me about, how similar the views were to our political line. And that shows the correctness of it, the fact that people that have different experience and backgrounds agree that the solution to the problem of women's oppression is scientific socialism.
I hear you.
And
go
ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, brother. Finish talking. I didn't mean to cut across you.
No, let's see. And also, you know, that they realized the importance of organization. And those were two takeaways from today's program. And that program should be available on our website, www.a-aprp-gc.org, shortly.
You know, Brother Anthony, and to all the panelists, when we talk about African liberation, one of the things that are real clear at the first Conference of Ghana Independence by Kwame Nkrumah, when he made a statement that the independence of Ghana is meaningless, not unless all of Africa is totally liberated, unified, and functioning as one government. We can see that it was going for a united continent, but they end up compromising. They end up with this thing they call the Organization of African Unity, which we can see the end results of that today. Now, it's funny how history seems to play itself over and over and over again. One lady made a statement today at the Women's Conference that Nkrumah was correct in terms of his analysis of saying African countries need to unite the continent and unite as one. They need to do it at that point in time and not to wait, because the waiting is very fatal. And now we can see what's going on. Well, I'm just wondering, Brother Haki, Anthony, Moses, when you look at the continent today, all of the countries is basically countries functioning under neocolonialism. We don't have one single country that is totally independent that can become the light, the battle cry, where we can take other Africans around the world and train them and nurture them and teach them how to go back home and transform that society to have their people liberated. This is something that we seem to be replaying again since 1957, prior to the independence of Ghana. Your response, Brother Anthony, first, and then other people can weigh in on it.
Sure. Let's see. At the time, almost all of these African countries became independent. The revolutionary political parties that led them to independence were relatively small in proportion to their population. And, you know, they hadn't developed a sufficient quantity of cadre to sustain, you know, themselves over the long haul. In other words, in case something happened to their political leadership. And let's see, it was an issue I raised on one of our programs in which we had a representative of the Friends of the Congo and also a representative of, the head of the Kawaida organization present. And I raised this question, about the importance of political education among the masses. Very often we're very dependent upon individual leadership. And, and that's something that the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, has learned from over the decades that we have been organizing African Liberation Day, Palestine Day, that that Pan-Africanism has to be built from the bottom up. A top-down approach will not work. And that's because individuals' egos getting in the way. And also, let's see, there was also the, we have not had sufficient cadre to take over the educational system of the youth of these countries. A lot of these countries were dependent upon former colonialist forces, either for their administrative tasks or for the education of the youth. So that tells me that Pan-Africanist forces have to be about developing political education mechanisms that can train, more cadre than what a lot of these existing organizations have right now.
Okay, Brother Moses, can you hear me? If you can hear me, Brother Moses, say Africa on the move. Brother Moses, if you can hear me, say Africa is on the move. Brother Moses, if you can hear me, say Africa on the move. We still having problems on this control board. So, panelists, we're doing the best we can. Let me see if I can bring in Brother Hackey. Brother Hackey, can you hear me? Or the whole board is going whack. Brother Anthony, yours is back online and still operating. Can you hear me, Brother Anthony?
Yes, I can.
We got to wait until our dials get, hopefully, get back in line and start functioning properly. But let's continue to carry on to talk about African Liberation Month in the APIPGC. Give people something to think about. Give people something to think about. Now, you know, the biggest problem that African people have today is the issue of disorganization. You know, 99.5% of our people do not belong in the organization. And we say if you want to make advancement, if you want to overcome these obstacles, we got to be organized because the enemy is organized. Plus, for organization, when you organize, you can do things more clearly, more efficiently, and you can measure progress more effectively. Now, how do we package this concept of organization to our people so they can get to understand the need for it, Brother Anthony? I know that's a hard question, but I'll actually take a stab at that. How can
we
package organization where it's so popular like a dance?
I think we need to do more programs like what we're doing with African Liberation Day, Palestine Day this year. In other words, we're doing a series of different webinars or talk programs trying to educate people, to our true history. And you know, it's interesting that we were going to talk about, this control of information. And without proper information, people cannot make the correct decisions. And so I think it's interesting, it's something that we were planning on talking about tonight. But one of our goals inside the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, is the political education of our people and also the development of a critical mass of our cadre so that we can proceed through all the steps necessary to liberate our homeland and unify it under a scientific socialist government.
Now, when you use the word political education, give me the difference or the distinction between education and political education. What's the difference?
Sure. Let's see. Political education is guided by revolutionary ideology. And for us, the correct ideology for the African Revolution is Nkrumah's Toryism, which is an ideology that that comes from the works, practices, writings, and lessons taught by Assiniboine Kwame Nkrumah, Ahmed Sekou Touré, and Kwame Touré during their lives while they were working to achieve Pan-Africanism. And the difference between that and just, you know, rote education is that it involves teaching people how to think critically, not just giving them data, but how to analyze that data and that information, and to analyze in whose interest is the information presented or given.
I hear you. One of the programs is coming up on Thursday the 26th from 11 to 2 a.m., I believe, is going to be highlighting students from all around the world. They're going to be calling in and talking about students are the spark. Now, why are students important? We see a lot of times when we see turmoil that take place, a lot of times you see students some kind of way be involved. What do you mean by the students are the spark? Talk a little bit about the crucial role of students, the crucial role that they can play in bringing about a change in society. Why they are the spark?
Sure. They are the catalyst, so to speak, for change, because the knowledge that they learn from these schools, colleges, and institutes that they go through to study, their role is to bring those skills back to the larger community and teach them those skills and information. And in that way, they spark revolutionary change. They can't carry it out. Only the masses of working people can do that. But they can. But the knowledge that they have, they can bring it back and teach the masses what they've learned from these institutions, and in that way serve as catalysts for change. As people such as Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X did when they were living. And if you look at our history carefully, you'll find that a lot of our political leadership got started in their youth, while they were in their 20s and 30s. So we've got to encourage our youth to fulfill their role as catalysts for change in society.
I hear you, brother. I hear you. So, to our listening audience, this is Africa on the Move. I'm Brother Africa. We just, as they say on the corner, kicking the bubble. But this bubble is based upon realities, based on facts. We are having a very difficult time operating on that board, and we have no control. So I think our board may be operating now. Go back to Haki. Brother Haki, if you can hear me, say Africa on the Move. 1, 2, 3, I'm going back to Haki. Okay, Brother Haki, if you can hear me, say Africa on the Move.
I can hear you.
Okay. Now, I was talking to Anthony earlier. We were talking about this whole question about Africa. Don't have one single independent country where they can use as advice to train and nurture other freedom fighters so we can go around the world and help liberate our people. What are some of the aisles that you have seen, looking at history, Brother Haki, that we have made in the 60s, and we come and see that today, and we continue to make these same aisles?
Some errors? You know, Brother Africa, yes. I'm not sure if a lot was happening can be qualified as errors. I think what happens is that you had this class dimension that exists, you know, in the context of the continent. And so you have a lot of people in positions of power who are comfortable with the status quo. In other words, the kind of exploitation of Africa is not necessarily a concern of theirs simply because they prosper individually or as a small group. And so, therefore, to say that their classism is a function of ignorance is to be misinformed. We should not automatically assume that their classism is a function of ignorance, but understand that there's a lot of times they're motivated simply by self-interest, pure and simple. In that context, when you start talking about actually having, you know, these kind of discussions or this kind of discourse around which way forward on the continent, you got to understand that philosophically, that mindset, that idea in terms of facilitating that kind of discussion on the continent is antithetical to the aspirations or the interests of a lot of the ruling elites in Africa. And so, therefore, the bottom line is that they're not going to allow you to come into Africa, you know, to simply, you know, to create those kind of cadres, to begin that process in terms of creating those kind of cadres, which is going to essentially challenge the status quo. Secondly, I think one of the things that also, Brother Africa, you see, there's an economic system in place which shows the underdevelopment or the exploitation of Africa. African leaders have been all too content in terms of participating in the structure. And the question becomes, so if you continue to participate in the structure, do you really think anything's going to get better for you? Of course, we can understand in hindsight, just even in contemporary terms, we understand that participating in this imperialist structure is not in the interest of Africa. So therefore, you know, the question becomes, what is it in terms of this imperialist structure which is so difficult for a lot of African leadership to grasp? You know, PLO Lumumba is very good in terms of talking about, you know, some of the real ironies when it comes to, you know, a lot of the policies African leaders embrace. And despite the destructive nature of these policies they embrace, they continue to embrace them anyway. So we're talking about a situation where, you know, certainly, there's certainly a degree in terms of self-hatred. There's a degree of colonialism in terms of the mindset of a lot of African leaders, and that is very, very true. Now, to the extent that we can impact that colonial mindset becomes a different question. I think Brother Amp is right. I think in terms of facilitating change on the continent, you have to start from the bottom up. But the problem is that in order to do that, you know, to facilitate that change from the bottom up, you have to have a certain amount of participation among all those higher up who allow such kind of activity to take place in the first place. You know, one of the things I notice on the continent is that when you talk about public gatherings, African states don't play that. They don't allow you to have public gatherings. It's very controlled. As a matter of fact, if I went out to the parks and just started talking about whatever it is going on in a public arena, I'm subject to be arrested. Simply because that kind of thing is frowned upon, that kind of individual effort in terms of addressing the systematic wrongs in society are frowned upon by leaders. You would think that African leaders would say, hey, we embrace people who are actually trying to bring some clarity to the situation, because unless our people fully understand the challenges they're confronted with, that's the only conceivable way for them to rise above the suppression. That doesn't happen. And so this class element is something that we have to take into consideration in terms of trying to innovate, you know, these kind of structures on the continent, which is in the best interest of Africa. Also, Brother Africa, I got, you know, one of the things that I just to talk about in terms of this colonial mindset, I think is so pivotal. I think when you talk about the organization of the African Union, now keep in mind, just a couple of decades ago, when they changed that to the African Union, they did that for specific reasons. Once the nations pressured if not bribe, African leaders to change the designation of the organization African Unity. In other words, this whole focus on unity was to be discarded. And so no longer the question of unity among African people will be relevant. What is relevant now is simply an organization of African people, African Union. So you have these African people coming together. But it's never discussed unity. So therefore, essentially what they've done is created an institution which is geared toward the perpetuation of imperialism. So you know, and as much as I like to be idealistic, and you know, as much as I like to believe, you know, that in fact that you know those the things that we need on the continent in terms of cadres, in terms of institutions, in terms of an awareness, in terms of what's going on, as much as we need those things, the bottom line is we're talking about a system in place. And so first and foremost, I think what we have to do is we have to identify people on the continent, you know, who understand the necessity in terms of change, you see. Ultimately, the idea is for us eventually be in a situation where, you know, we have this exchange between Africans on the continent and Africans from the U.S. going back and forth around the building, around our building efforts. Of course, I'm not naive. I understand that people's positions of power in the Western states are not simply going to allow that to happen. And the irony of irony is that if you were to successful in terms of creating that kind of relationship between Africans on the continent and Africans born in the U.S. or Africans in the West, moving back and forth in terms of creating these cadres, these institutions that are so relevant in terms of the existence of African people, the problem is that, you know, once Western states go to the African leaders and say, listen, this guy or this group is a problem, they must be dealt with. You know what's going to happen? African leaders are going to deal with you. I can't tell you how many times I've been an African and followed by agents of the state. I had the opportunity to talk to one in the island off of Tanzania. I forgot the name of the island, but I had the opportunity to talk to him. And I talked to another one in Mombasa on the coast of Kenya. So I noticed he kept following me everywhere I go. I look around and say, oh, here is this guy. So I had the opportunity to sit down and talk to him. So how you doing? So what's going on? Everything all right? Yeah, you know, it's a beautiful country out here. So, you know, what can you do to keep it beautiful like this? You know, and that stuff like that. You know what I mean? But clearly, you know, so when Western states tell African leaders, I want you to watch these individuals, African leaders watch those individuals as though you're somehow an intrinsic threat to the aspirations of the continent of Africa or African people generally. So it's a very complex question that you ask, Brother Africa. It's a very, very complex question you ask. All those things are needed. All those things are needed. Certainly, information goes a long way in terms of moving people forward. But the problem is that when you start talking about information and when you talk about the power of technology to determine what information gets out there and what information doesn't, that becomes a different question. Right now, you know, the problems we may have in terms of just communicating on this little show, imagine if we could do it on a much grander scale in terms of trying to convey this information throughout the world. There are very difficulties we would encounter in terms of trying to do that. So clearly, I think we have to work on many, many fronts in terms of trying to achieve, you know, what we're trying to achieve in terms of, you know, cadres, institutions, information. I think we have much operate on a much broader scale in terms of trying to achieve that. I think that's going to, in terms of achieving what we want to achieve, I think it's going to be facilitated by both working inside the United States and outside the United States in terms of achieving that. I think nations like the Caribbean, I think Central and South America, I think those more progressive nations will play a big part in terms of facilitating what we try to do. So I think at some point we have to incorporate countries like Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Eritrea, in terms of assisting us in terms of trying to bring into reality those kind of institutions, those kind of cadres, those kind of information that's so pertinent to the development of Africa. Because one thing is clear, you know, as capitalism deconstruct, there's no question about it, Africa's going to pay a huge price. And as a result of this so-called Ukraine-Russian war already, and just in terms of the price of grain being that Russia and Ukraine control so much dissemination of grain, a lot of those states are catching hell. And so it's very difficult in terms of bringing about some semblance of discourse when countries are confronted with famine. So it's a very complex problem about Africa. And in fact, if we had organization in this among, you know, the wealthy in American society who had a consciousness, who understood what is really going on, then they could move to actually do those kind of things in which we'd like to see coming to fruition. But the problem is that most Africans with wealth don't have that kind of consciousness. And so I think to some extent we have to do a better job in terms of trying to reach those Africans with wealth in terms of enhancing their consciousness so they understand, or at least they begin to understand, that their survival is dependent upon what happens in the continent of Africa, and to stop thinking that somehow that their experience is uniquely American, and so therefore what happens to them is uniquely American fare, that what happens in Africa has no impact on them. So we have to educate them better in terms of unlearning that kind of nonsense. But it's very, very, not to be vague, but it's a very, very complex question that you ask, Brother Africa. And much as I like to see those things, you know, come into fruition in terms of, you know, the colleges, and institutions, and the dissemination of information, the bottom line is that we have to really think strategically in terms of achieving those things. And now that's going to take a lot of serious discussion in terms of achieving those kind of things.
You know, and I want everybody who can chime in to do so. And we'll go one by one, but how you said something interesting. Now, I've been grappling with this for a long time around this whole notion, the idea, or this narrative that money can free you. People say the more money you have, and the more freedom you can get. I find it not to be true, because when it comes to our people, something strange about their philosophy. They have money, but they're truly scared to spend their money in areas where it needs to be spent. And if they do it, they're scared that the system will find ways to punish them for it. So therefore, even with money, it does allow them to truly make decisions that they want to make. What's the purpose of having money and you can't spend it the way you totally want to spend? And that seems to be a dilemma for African people, not for mothers. Other folks seem to have liberties to spend their money as they please. So I'm just asking myself, what is the purpose if you have money and you can't spend it according to how you want to spend it? You can't invest it where you want to invest it. You can't spread it around to whoever you may want to spread it around. Panelists, is something wrong with that picture? I start off.
There is.
To bring Sister Eleanor in for a while. Okay. Sister Eleanor, your response to my statement.
What is your question, Brother Africa? I'm sorry. Please.
Question is, why
are they
going to free us to give this kind of freedom? Why is it African people scared to spend our money and make choices where they may be penalized by the system if they do? It's no accident why athletes don't contribute to other progressive revolutionary things. They have sent them all kind of messages not to, and they choose not to do that. So what's the purpose of having money if you can't spend it the way you want it?
Well, I think, as Brother Haki and Brother Anthony had mentioned, it's neocolonialism and it's self-gain and self-wealth. And that's and wanting to maintain the status quo. That's the issue with money. But in terms of inflation and domestically right now, I think people have to be educated. And people realize that Tweet owns, Amazon owns the platform Tweet that allowed the murder of 10 African people in Buffalo to be broadcast live. They would think twice about ordering things from Prime and from Amazon. I also think that people understood the importance of organizing and seeing many millions of dollars Amazon spent on union busting down in Mississippi, but yet how successful the union organizing effort was on Staten Island. We begin to put our money where our mouth is. And you're talking about the ruling class, aren't you, Brother Africa, and where they spend their money?
That's correct.
Yeah, they're trying to maintain the status quo. And their interest isn't the future so much of the nation as it is their current situation and that of their community, whether it be their family, their tribe, or whatever. So as long as you have that kind of mentality, that neo-colonialist mentality, you're not going to see a new paradigm develop. But I firmly believe this is an opportunity to see a unified Africa around the sudden and radical need for change in terms of energy production and renewable energy sources, especially when you consider the extreme drought in the Sahel region, geographical region of Africa. It would be a perfect time to think about reusable energy and whether it's windmills, whatever it is that utilizes that heat to produce a product that can be sold to the EU and other venues. And so there is a window of opportunity right now that I see here on the forefront.
Brother Moses, can you hear me? What you make of this question? People have the money and scared to spend it the way they want to. Brother Moses, what's the value of having wealth or having so-called wealth if you can't spend it the way you want to? What does that make you?
Yeah, well, wealth is... Health is your only wealth when you get down to it. But yeah, money and property and things are wealth. The self-determination is to say, to look out for the best interests of the world and try to leave the planet in better shape than you found it.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Brother Anthony, your response to my situation is trying to understand the phenomenon of having. Just go ahead, Anthony.
Yes. I want to deal with a point that Brother Hakeem made earlier, and that is in terms of building a mass organization, and it's going to take organization. We have to use every means possible. Now, right now, most Pan-Africanist organizations are small and poor. But the way you get around these forces is that every organization that exists has to organize where their membership is at, whether it be in Africa, Central South America and the Caribbean, North America. But people have to organize where they're at, and we have to master the technology for communicating with each other. We have to gain mastery of that. We don't control it, but we have to learn how to use it effectively. That is the only way we're going to build
the mass organization that's necessary to bring about Pan-Africanism. Now, in answer to your question about money, you raise a very important point, Brother Africa, and that goes to shows that to show that money is not power, because money is often controlled by the banks, by finance capital. And a lot of these Africans that have big bucks, they're in very visible positions, hence very vulnerable positions. For the most part, they don't have the freedom to spend their money the way they want to. They have to spend it the way other sectors of the petty bourgeoisie or bourgeoisie do, and that is to maintain the dominance of finance capital. It is not only their mindset for the most part, but also the fact that they are visible, highly visible. You know, people like your entertainers, your athletes, those make up most of your multimillionaires, at least in the U.S. anyway. And let's see, in some parts of the diaspora, it could be government officials and at home. But because of their visibility, that puts a constraint on them because they can't do anything they want with their money. Because, because the eyes of the media are on them. So I think those are the factors. You raise a good question because that shows there's a difference between power and money. Having a lot of money does not necessarily translate into power. Power comes from the control of land, either your own or somebody else's. And that's something Africans generally lack.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Any response, Brother Haki?
Yeah.
On this money question.
You hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, we
yeah.
can.
I hear Brother Anthony. You know, money is not power. The bottom line, that which we call money is really no more than a computer configuration. We're talking about some digital idea in terms of something imaginary in terms of what constitutes money. It doesn't physically exist. So you're absolutely correct. To a large extent, it's simply a mindset. But the question in terms of, there's this hesitancy of Africans with wealth to use it to empower African people. Part of it is to sustain, to perpetuate the status quo, and there's no question about that. Some of it is ignorance, and no question about that. But I think that one of the bigger problems is that there's an adequate understanding in terms of the depth of the issues that are confronting the African community, in the Western world. I think that lack of understanding in terms of the depth of the issues impacting the African community, I think to a large extent affords the Africans with wealth to think that their problems or the problems of poor African people are not the problem, not their problem. Not understanding, if you're talking in the context of a system, the system has certain precepts, certain ideas that it has to perpetuate in terms of maintaining power. So that means that the eventual impoverization of large number of African people in order to maintain the status quo, then that's precisely what happens. And so to the extent that African people with wealth becomes a fundamental threat to golden regions of power, wealthy people, the system has no problem in terms of relieving them of that wealth. They don't understand that. And in that context, Brother Effen is right, that it is not really the money that brings about the definitive kind of results that we seek. It's really, one, an idea in motion, and secondly, the acquisition of land in terms of the power in its truest sense. One of the things that, you know, when we talk about the Republic of New Africa, we talk about, you know, liberating five states. It is very interesting when those five states, which constitute the majority of African people, if they had their politics, in fact, liberation would be relatively easy to achieve because they got the numbers and they have the finances in terms of achieving that. It's only the lack of political clarity that prevents, you know, Africans in those five states from actually coming together to create a de facto state, in which they can do the kind of things they need to do in terms of, you know, excelling and surviving under very hostile circumstances. But I think, Brother Africa, I think you're right. I think, you know, when you start talking about equating, you know, money to power, it becomes not only a philosophical problem, but it becomes a more tactical problem. Because the thing is that in order to bring about change, it doesn't necessarily take the money in terms of bringing about that change. It takes the understanding to bring about that change. And so if you got people working in concert, moving to create certain objectives or to achieve certain ends, strategically working together to achieve those ends, then that is power in its truest sense, and that makes it possible things to change. But money, and to the extent that it has some value in terms of the movement, people tend to equate money with being successful. And so if a person with money speaks to them and tells them there's fundamentally a problem in terms of the oppression of African people based upon a myriad of socioeconomic circumstances, they're more likely to listen as opposed to someone, you know, who doesn't have that kind of economic standing. I know that's unfortunate, and it really shouldn't be that way. Barring, you know, media exposure, the tendency to think, you know, that money defines success is paramount in the minds of a lot of people. I think one of the reasons why Martin Luther King and Malcolm X are so successful in terms of disseminating their message was because of the media exposure. The media exposure translated into being successful, and so therefore they had the ear of the masses of people. The reality is that these capitalists now are not going to allow anybody who has a message of empowerment to have the visibility of the media at large. That's not going to happen because they understand the power of the media, and so that's not going to happen. But again, right. I think in terms, yeah, you said something, Brother Africa?
No, go ahead, finish your thought.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'll conclude because I know I've been long-winded, and I don't want to do that and take time from other panelists. But I'll simply conclude by simply saying, these questions definitely have to be discussed. And it's going to take very in-depth discussions in terms of, you know, moving forward, because there's a lot of nuance that we have to contend with in terms of really being in a position to bring about the kind of movement that we need in terms of true empowerment. And I close with that.
Okay, in closing on our program tonight, may I actually talk a little bit something positive? Let's talk about Cuba, Brother Haki. We got to ram up this engine and get moving. We want to take as many people from around the world. We want them to meet us in Cancun to go to Cuba in defiance of the U.S. blockade. Talk to the people why it's important to support Cuba and why they should come with the African Awareness Association in conjunction with Africa on the Moon.
Well, the great thing about Cuba, when we talk about the kind of historical problems African people have been confronted with, in the Western world, Cuba similarly had similar kinds of problems in terms of overcoming their obstacles in terms of, you know, politics, which adversely impacted on the lives of African people in Cuba. As a result of that revolution, Cuba has been able to establish institutions which create individuals, very humane individuals, individuals you're proud to associate with. And so one of the things when we talk about the role of institutions, when we contrast Cuban institutions with institutions of America, and we ask ourselves, why is greed, avarice, individualism, selfishness, a trait to be admired in America,
Whereas in Europe, you got things where collectivity, working together, sharing, caring, are attributes in which people embrace. Well, it speaks to the fundamental nature in terms of how institutions work. And so Cuba is doing a very good job in terms of creating the most humane, most energetic people, most loving people that you ever want to meet. And so we encourage people to go to Cuba firsthand and see for themselves, you know, what makes Cuba such a marvelous place, not only to visit, but to live. I think once people get an understanding in terms of, you know, what Cuba is all about by actually engaging in discourse with the Cuban people, and in particular when you talk about the Committee to Defense of the Revolution, actually talking to community leaders in terms of their views around issues pertaining to, you know, politics, economics, social concerns. So when you get an opportunity to talk to people in the community about those issues, then you get a sense in terms of not only Cubans understanding the necessity in terms of engaging these issues, but understanding that in order to perpetuate conditions that are favorable to humanity, then people, that Cubans understand that they must continue to grow and understand the world in which they live in. And as a consequence, one of the things, Brother Africa, people often ask, well, what kind of hostility do Cuban people have toward those people born in America? Cubans don't have any hostility toward people born in America. They understand uniquely that the problems that society is confronted with has to do with an imperial system in place, which has nothing to do with the masses of people who have no power, no control in terms of the execution of imperialism. They understand that. And so when you go to Cuba, they treat you respectfully, lovingly, just like they do anyone else. And so you got to simply marvel at these people, you know, despite the historical atrocities that confronted them, they're such so peaceful and loving, but yet they're very, very knowledgeable. And so we have to definitely take our hats off to Cuba in terms of its educational system, one of the best education systems in the world. And despite the U.S. hostilities toward Cuba, to be able to use the wealth that you do have for the benefit of the masses of people and to manifest itself in terms of educational system would create some of the best minds the world has ever known. It's a testament to the Cuban system. So it's important that our people, asking people, all people, it's important that we understand that such a paradigm exists. And going to Cuba and for yourself to see that paradigm in action, I think, is a thing to behold. So we encourage people to disregard the propaganda, disregard the disinformation, go to Cuba and see for yourself. There's much to be learned from the Cuban experience. There's much to be learned from the Cuban people in terms of movements, in terms of, you know, dealing with atrocity, all those things which are so key in terms of survival, you know, in a very hostile terrain. So clearly we ask people, you know, to go to Cuba to see for themselves firsthand the beauty of Cuba. Now, this trip takes place on July 23rd to July 31st, and that's leaving from Cancun, Mexico. Now, while in Cuba, we'll be going to Guantanamo, Santiago de Cuba, and Havana. Now, for application, please email us at African Awareness Association, all one word, number2@gmail.com. For additional information, you can contact us at area code 804-549-7492 or area code 202-714-9435 or visit our website at www.aaa-cubatours.com. So we really think that people would benefit a lot from actually going to Cuba and see for themselves, you know, what Cuba is all about, and to bring back some of those experiences, some of those understandings to facilitate real change in our communities. you know, so for those people who don't think that change is possible, to go to Cuba, I'm sure you have to reevaluate that stance, because what Cuba has been able to achieve is miraculous. And so clearly, you know, there's much to be learned from Cuba, and we encourage people firsthand to go see for themselves the greatness of Cuba.
Talk to me, Brother Anthony, why we should support and travel to Cuba and come on this delegation. Get the people something to think about to come with us.
Certainly. It's an opportunity to learn what life is like in a society that is trying to build a socialist society, which is something a lot of people in the U.S. have never experienced. Also, other parts of the African diaspora as well. And so it's definitely a life-changing experience, and it gives you a chance to learn more about a different economic system.
and, you know, and also to experience the beauty and, you know, and the friendliness of the masses of the people in Cuba, and how a society that is trying to build socialism, guided by revolutionary ideology, can transform people. So I think it's very useful.
Sister Eleanor, talk to us. Why we should support Cuba and go to Cuba? Can you hear me, Sister Eleanor? Again, this control is a control board, totally out of control. When I'm speaking to you, also my phone is out of control and gone whack, and it became dysfunctional in the last hour or so. Now, this phone is very important in terms of my communications. This is another example of how they can control you. What you think is yours, you never own. So tomorrow, I have to figure out most likely how to get another phone, or is it just that they have made it so it became so inoperable? Because we are doing a good job of trying to organize our people. My phone is totally gone. So we can't get Eleanor. Can we get Brother Moses? Brother Moses, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Brother Moses? Say yes or no. Okay, what we're going to do right now, because this control board is totally out of control, we'd like to thank everybody for allowing us to come in and share this information with you today. We're going to redo this program, part two, Disinformation Lies. Hopefully next week we'll have better results. So until next time, you can move to go forward, backward, novel. This is Africa on the Move. Come and join us in the Africa Wellness Association as we begin to prepare to go to Cuba. And you find out more about this trip and support it by contacting the African Wellness Association at, like Brother Haki said, all spelled together, lower caps, African Wellness Association, 2@gmail.com. So again, brothers and sisters, people of goodwill, we can always strive to go forward, backwards, never. We'll see you next week.
Hello? Mm-hmm.
Hello?